Democracy Concept presents Latent Partners, Part 7 of an 8-part series that discusses fundamental changes to Ghana's democracy. The music is by Kwame Ray Ellis. When did we celebrate Ghana's 50th independence anniversary, my son? Ghana at 50? Let's see. I think this was in the year 2007. Grandpa, Ghana at 50 was a great time. I agree, my son. Even though there were some partisan undercurrents, our 50th independence anniversary was a national hit. It certainly was, Grandpa. I was especially fascinated by the celebration on March 6th. Yes, that was the culminating event, and it was pretty exciting. Grandpa, that event on March 6th took the whole nation by storm. People traveled from all over the country to the capital for the celebration. That is true. And I was especially excited about how our people dressed up for the occasion. Did you notice that, my son? I couldn't have missed that, Grandpa. Almost everybody was dressed in the national colors. The variety of dresses and the fashion on display were very uplifting. My son, what Ghana 50 achieved was an awakening of national pride. For once, the Ghana flag appeared everywhere. Grandpa, I was at Independence Square and it was spectacular. I watched the celebration on TV, and you know what happened soon after. I wrote a poem. You did? I did, my son. Here it is. Take a look at where the marker is. Your poem is about Ghana at 50, a missed opportunity. Do you want me to read it, Grandpa? Yes, you may read it. Okay, here it is. Ghana at 50, a missed opportunity. I have been young and now I am old, yet I have not seen the Ghana flag adorn Ghanaians as during the Jubilee Independence Anniversary. In their numbers they came, the Ghana flag they waved. In various fashions they appeared, red, gold, green with a black star fashioned into various dresses and styles. The British flag vanished. The American flag disappeared, replaced by the flag of Ghana in taxis, trotros, and private cars. Alas, the Ghana flag has returned to its glory to be loved and admired. This new love for the flag, this new love for the land, I said to myself, I mused in my soul, what a huge opportunity it presents to challenge the sons and daughters to develop new attitudes for excellence. Yet, as they came, they went. In their old mindsets, they went. Championing African excellence, the theme for the celebration, boldly written on huge banners, waved at them in the wind. But did they understand? How could they understand when they were not taught? How could they be moved when they were not challenged? African excellence, what's its essence to the taxi or trotro driver, the ordinary worker, the individual sons and daughters of the land? So they came, a huge resource to be harnessed, but back home they went dispersed, to return to old ways. Championing African excellence, whatever its essence, not registered on their minds, its implications lost on them. What an opportunity for a reawakening. What an opportunity missed. That poem, my son, summarizes the relationship between the state and her citizens. How do you mean, Grandpa? The state, through its government, shouts high-sounding slogans with a notion that its citizens will understand and tag along. Sadly, the citizens don't seem to get what is going on. This is what I sought to bring out in this poem. Okay, I get your point now, Grandpa. You are saying that our governments and the people are worlds apart. You made this point clearly at the very beginning of our conversations, and you've expressed it beautifully at the end of your poem. Exactly. I am saying that the state and her citizens are not flowing in the same direction. They are not in sync. This station has left her citizens far behind in the march towards national development. If this country is to achieve great success, it must work in tandem with her population. The state must get its citizens to understand that they have a part to play in moving this nation forward. That attitude is clearly lacking in this country, and it needs to change. I see, Grandpa. You may not know this, but I once traveled with a group to the Mediterranean island of Malta.
You did, Grandpa? Tell me about it.
It's a long story, my son. Let's focus on our discussion. Okay, Grandpa, but you tell me before I leave, right? Well, if you have the time, why not? I will. But to continue, Malta is a tiny island nation that thrives on tourism. I hear so, Grandpa. My visit to Malta taught me what it means for a state to be in sync with its citizens. And what exactly did you learn, Grandpa? You see, Malta is made up of two islands. The smaller northern island is called Gojo, and it is barely inhabited. I see. So, Grandpa, what's special about that place? This uninhabited island has an underground tunnel built into it, in which Maltese history, culture, and industry are exhibited through a combination of light, picture, and sound. Wow, it must be very exciting, Grandpa. It's indeed very exciting to be in that tunnel. And I tell you, it's a major tourist attraction. I can imagine. Malta is also known for producing fine lace. And one particular town, sadly, I've forgotten its name, is famous for making the finest lace on the island. I see. And do you know what the people of Malta say to every visitor? What do they say, Grandpa? Two well-rehearsed messages. It's almost like a song, and it's always on their lips. I see. And what do they say exactly? Have you visited Gojo yet? It's a must see. Please make time to go there. Oh, they actively promote their main tourist attraction, right? Exactly. And their other song is similar. Have you gone to see where the finest lace in the world is made? Don't leave Malta without going there. So, Grandpa, was this done through a promotional campaign on TV or what? No, nothing of that sort, my son. Old songs were sung by taxi drivers, hotel attendants, shop owners, and shop assistants. By the ordinary Maltese citizens. That's very interesting. Yes, my son, by the ordinary people. They understand that their country thrives on tourism, and they, the citizens, are the promoters and drivers of that tourism. They are in sync with the state. I see what you mean now, Grandpa. Sadly, that's lacking in our own country. Yes, and that is one key weakness in our democratic experience. This country, currently, is completely out of tune with her citizens. How, Grandpa? You see, our governments appear to make plans and shout slogans. Sadly, actual content of those plans is known only to government and public officials who attend countless meetings and conferences in plush hotels reportedly to promote those plans. The people who are supposed to benefit from the plans know little and often behave in ways contrary to the objectives intended in those plans. You have a great point there, Grandpa. The majority of our people don't know where this nation is heading. We wake up daily, listen to the rhetoric of our leaders, and go back to sleep. There is no direction. This nation is adrift. It is headed nowhere. You said it, my son. If this country is to make any significant headway in development, the state and the governments should understand that without the full participation of our people, this country cannot go far. Grandpa, this brings me to the African proverb which says, if you want to walk fast, walk alone. But if you want to walk far, walk together with others. Exactly, my son. The state must identify with that philosophy and work together with her citizens in order to walk far in her developmental efforts. This country faces a myriad of problems, and it is only through a synchronized march with her citizens that it can ever hope to solve those problems. I agree, Grandpa, but I'm wondering how practically this can be done. In which ways can our country pull the citizens towards national development? I'll give you one example of how a nation can pull its citizens along the path of development. And that happened right here in this country. Really? And when was this, Grandpa? You remember the late General Ignatius Kutu Achampo, don't you? Yes, he was the one who overthrew a second Republican government through a coup d'etat. I remember him very well, Grandpa. It was in the early 70s, and I was in secondary school then. Do you remember that during those times, there were severe shortages of food in this country? Yes, Grandpa. That was when the term essential commodities came into mainstream usage. Those days were very difficult for me in school. I could couldn't get even toothpaste for two whole terms and had to use an antiseptic solution to brush my teeth. It ended up completely discoloring my teeth. You do remember, it was that difficult, but that is where our own good example flows from, my son. You mean something good came out from all those difficulties? How, Grandpa? Yes, indeed. It was those difficulties that moved General Achampong and his NRC to launch the Operation Feed Yourself campaign. Ah, yes, you are right, Grandpa. Do you remember the slogan for the media campaign, my son? Yes, it was, "There is money in the soil. Go for it." Yes, that was it. Exactly, my son. And with that slogan, the general galvanized the nation in a bold and determined effort to achieve food self-sufficiency for the country and stop the reliance on imported food items. I remember that vividly. The population was challenged to grow one kind of food crop or another. And you remember how General Achampong mobilized university students to construct the canals of two irrigation dams. Very much so, Grandpa. I remember also that secondary school students then agitated to be part of those canal constructions, but they were turned down on account of age. It was the right decision not to allow you to dig canals. You were not strong enough for that kind of work. I disagree, Grandpa. In those days, some secondary school students were fathers, but they were in the minority. Even in Form 2, you were still very tiny. You could not properly hold the spade, let alone dig with it. Yes, but we were excited about the prospect of doing service for our nation, even at those tender ages. Well, let's get back to our story. After those irrigation canals were completed, Achampong got the locals to plant food crops on the irrigated lands. Yes, I remember that. In those times, workers in formal employment worked Mondays to Saturdays. And you know what the general did? He took Saturdays off the official working days and charged every worker to work the land on Saturdays to grow food for consumption. I remember that as well. I think it was his way of getting every person in informal employment to fully participate in the Operation Feed Yourself program. It was indeed, and our people rose to the call, didn't they, my son? Yes, they did. It was an overwhelming response. I remember that in no time, gardens started appearing everywhere, along the roads, in the backyards of homes and offices, and on empty plots of land. I lived at that time with my uncle in a mining town. There was a big golf course where we lived, and you wouldn't believe it. The golf course was turned into food gardens by the residents who were senior staff members of the mining company then in operation. That was how successful the campaign was. Did you know that through the Operation Feed Yourself campaign, this country achieved self-sufficiency in food supply for the next few years and even exported food to neighboring countries? I didn't know that, Grandpa, but I remember that in my school, we produced our own food for 2 years. Indeed, our school saved money on food and used the money saved for some projects in the school. This example, my son, shows only one way in which a nation can pull its citizens along the path of development. I see your point clearly now, and now understand what you mean by the government must pull the people along in national development. If we are ever going to achieve much, this nation must walk that path. It is the right thing to do. Sadly, we don't see that happening anymore in this country, Grandpa. You are right, my son. That is not happening anymore. Our leaders have either gone to sleep or are playing ostrich. Sadly so, Grandpa, but that should not continue. So, I repeat my question. In what ways can we pull the people along the path of development? In any ways imaginable, my son, especially with respect to the human elements of development. Human elements? How do you mean, Grandpa? Tell me, what major problems face this country? Poor roads, insufficient power supply, an erratic economy that never seems to want to take off. Poor, yes, you are right, but those are infrastructural and economic issues. I am talking about problems caused by human behavior, my son. Okay, in that case, I can say that we have problems with sanitation and public hygiene, Grandpa. Exactly, a As a people, we are fond of spitting anywhere and everywhere. We sneeze and cough without covering our noses and mouths. We urinate anywhere we want. We defecate in open places and throw our litter everywhere in the open. We have a horrible behavior.
You are right, Grandpa. The other day, a traffic control staff at our main airport was caught on camera urinating on the tarmac.
That's exactly the kind of horrible behavior I'm talking about. But that is not all. Our patriotic spirit is dead, and so is our spirit of voluntarism. We treat state property with abandon, and our sense of being one another's keeper is completely lost.
But, Grandpa, as much as I agree with you on those issues, I don't see how they affect our development.
Isn't it the big issues that really matter?
Yes, of course. The big issues do matter. But the human factor costs this nation more money than we can ever imagine.
Perhaps, taken together, they become the big issue.
I don't understand, Grandpa. You need to come play on this.
Do you know how much diseases like malaria, typhoid, and cholera cost this nation?
I have no idea.
I will tell you, malaria is the leading public health problem in this country, and it costs this nation $38 million every year. And human behavior contributes greatly to the spreading of malaria.
$38 million, Grandpa? That is huge.
And that is not all. Typhoid and cholera together could cost this nation a similar amount annually. Yet, these are completely preventable diseases.
I see your point, Grandpa. Poor public behavior catalyzes the transmission of diseases that cause this nation fortune to treat.
That is the whole point. If we do nothing about our public behavior, this country will continue to throw away money she can easily save.
And that money will be better spent on development.
Exactly. So you see, what you call the small issues are in reality the big issues, my son.
Okay, Grandpa. I think I should allow you to make your point.
In that case, let's look at sanitation and public hygiene. What issues come out from there, my son?
I think indiscriminate littering is a common issue,
and so is defecating and urinating in open places, and all the issues you have already mentioned, Grandpa. And why do you think people litter anyhow and defecate in open places?
When it comes to littering, I think it's just a habit.
But people defecate and urinate in open places because they have no toilets at all and no public toilets they can use.
That is very true.
And how do you think this habit and behavior of our people can be changed?
I guess you agree that such behavior is not good, my son.
Change our behavior, Grandpa? That would be a tough one.
And why do you say that?
Who is going to enforce the change?
You saw how a campaign by one of our vice presidents fell flat on his face.
Grandpa, we're thinking of the impossible.
You think so?
I disagree, my son. We can develop a better public behavior if the state and her governments work closely with the people.
And how do you suppose we do that?
I will make you answer that question yourself, my son. Tell me, concerning our countrymen who live in Europe and America, how do they behave in public? Do they throw their litter anywhere and anyhow?
No way, Grandpa. They will not dare do that.
And why not? Is it only because they could be arrested?
No, not necessarily. It's just not that. The system in those countries does not allow such behavior.
Exactly, my son. You mentioned their system. Now answer me. Did that system drop from the sky?
No, Grandpa. I think that system has been developed over many years.
Exactly. It must have been carefully crafted, nurtured, disseminated, and enforced until it produced the accepted public behavior among the citizens. That is the direction our governments must point the citizens in. That is the way to develop acceptable public behavior.
But Grandpa, that's exactly what our former vice president sought to do and failed.
You make me laugh. That was a little more than a lame approach towards changing public behavior. it was a failure from its very inception because the people were not involved. So, Grandpa, what is your solution? How can we change this unhealthy public behavior? But I thought you answered that yourself a while ago. You see, the state and their governments must craft acceptable standards of public behavior, create systems to translate those standards into norms, and work closely with their citizens, get them to follow those norms through a combination of enforcement and free will. But that would be a long-term measure, Grandpa. Yes, indeed. But how else do you think human behavior can be changed? In a year or two, or through shouted slogans only? No, my son. Lasting change will require determined and persistent effort, not by one government, but by the state and all her governments. I see. So let's get into the specifics. How, in practical terms, can this be done? First, the state must define the standards for public behavior. For example, we can aim for no littering, no defecating, and no urinating in the open, or for covering the nose and mouth when coughing or sneezing. This will only be the first step. Okay, so the standards are set by the state. Then what? Then, the state must identify what needs to be done to achieve those standards of behavior and map out ways for doing those things, including the roles the citizens would need to play. Do we want to stop open defecation and indiscriminate littering? Let standards of behavior be set, and let authorities figure out what can be done to achieve the set standards through close collaboration with the people. I guess the same can be said about the plastic menace that has engulfed this nation, Grandpa. You are right. We want to rid our streets, gutters, soils, rivers, lakes, and beaches of plastic bags, bottles, and caps. The same principle applies. We should not leave our people behind. Grandpa, what about patriotism and national pride? Does the principle still apply? Of course, my son. We want to promote patriotism and national pride, or the spirit of voluntarism. We need to set the standard, identify what must be done to achieve the standard, and involve the people in achieving the standard. Grandpa, it's now clear to me why we have so many problems that defy solution. Our governments have done nothing to pull the people along the path of development. That's my whole point. What makes it all so sad is that an important, powerful resource, which could be exploited to drive the population along the path of development, has been neglected by the state. Which resource has the state neglected, Grandpa? I'm talking about our chiefs. Together, constitute one resource that has been neglected in our nation's developmental effort. I don't understand, Grandpa. You don't? Well, let me show you. Tell me, how do our people regard our chiefs? With respect, generally, though that is fading gradually. You are right, but you cannot deny that our chiefs command great authority over their subjects, can you? I guess you are right, Grandpa. Our chiefs hold such powerful sway over our peoples that at their command, their subjects will rise to whatever cause they direct. That's very true, Grandpa. There are strong allegiances to our chiefs in our communities. You are right. And that means that we can make our chiefs the prime movers of certain critical aspects of our development. Do you see that? Not really, Grandpa. We have been discussing attitude change among our population, and we realize that our chiefs hold sway over our people. You should make that connection, my son. Oh, I understand now. But suggesting that we should exploit the power of our chiefs towards changing attitudes. Exactly. And how shall we do that, Grandpa? Let's take the issue of sanitation in the communities. The district assemblies could start a competition among the various towns and villages in their jurisdiction. Let's call it the cleanest village or town competition. And then what? The competition must have clear criteria to be met, the mode of declaring winners, and the prizes to be won. Uh-huh. And who will win those prizes? The chiefs or their villages? I think it should be for the village or town. And what kind of prizes do you propose? That should be for the assemblies to determine. But prizes should be attractive and have an impact on the communities, town or village road improvements, primary health facilities, school buildings, textbooks, school tables and chairs, computers, construction of drains, streetlights, etc. could be considered as prices. And where do the chiefs come in? The district assemblies should make the chiefs the focal point for the competition. The chiefs should lead the efforts of the communities. Okay, so the chiefs would drive the efforts of their people towards winning the competition. Is that the idea? Yes, the chiefs will exploit their authority over their peoples to move them into action and attract development to their villages. But Grandpa, this can only happen in the small towns and villages. I doubt if it will work in the metropolitan areas. I don't agree. It will work in the metropolitan areas as well. But even if this idea produces positive results only in the villages, it will be a great move forward. Don't you think so? And if this is made a yearly competition, we should see some great improvement in our villages and towns over time. You are right. But is sanitation the only thing chiefs can be involved in? No, my son. Chiefs can play several roles in national development. They can, for example, help increase the production of food and cash crops, such as cocoa, coffee, and cotton, among others. All we need to do is to engender healthy competition and provide prizes which will positively impact the towns and villages. I see. Are there any other areas chiefs can be movers of national development? Yes, there are several areas. I can think of getting chiefs to be drivers of national harmony and cohesion through the use of our culture. I don't get it, Grandpa. How do you mean? Are you not aware that there are some unhealthy tribal and ethnic undercurrents in our society? Yes, Grandpa. But it didn't used to be like that a few decades back. Then, we could laugh at ourselves and move on. But now it's risky to do that. It's very sad. We can change that if we use our chiefs to foster intertribal tolerance and understanding. And how can they achieve that, Grandpa? The state could promote cultural exchange programs among the various tribes, with the chiefs as a spearhead. Frequent interactions among our peoples will break down tribal misconceptions and barriers and create mutual respect. That's an interesting idea, Grandpa. I am glad you appreciate this idea. Our chiefs can also help in the administration of justice in their villages. Rather than setting up law courts to deal with misdemeanors, the state should use their palaces to handle such cases. Our chiefs and elders are excellent in settling disputes between persons and families. And that is very significant because magistrates and high courts are often sited far from the villages. You got it, my son. But sadly, our chiefs, like all the people, have been left behind in our developmental effort. This buttresses the point I made early on, Grandpa. Our problems defy solution because our governments have done nothing to pull the people along the path of development. But that should change. The state should begin to work with our people, consistently develop our society. The state should embrace and promote the values of integrity, love for work, pride in honest gain, respect of time, respect of the law, the proper use of money, the proper use of language, among others, until they become the mainstream behavior. You are right, Grandpa. And that proverb comes to mind again. Together, we can achieve great things for our country. Together, we shall walk far. And that brings us to the end of Latent Partners. Stay tuned for part 8, which is titled Defensive Mode. Thanks for listening. Thank you.